I should have probably had to join. Hare Krishna. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shumati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitya Namine Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pracharcha Desha Tarini Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Is Gadadhar here? No. Anuradha, this oil is the essence of chewing gum. It's really nothing to do with attar. You can afford offering better things than that to Radha Gokulananda. Should just throw it out. Should get real stuff. I'm not satisfied with the oil offered to Radha Gokulananda. That's what the presentation's about. Hare Krishna, nice to be back here again. I'm sorry we haven't come earlier, but as is usual for being in the UK, it's a very busy place. Don't bump against the computer, okay. And remember, generally when I come, then I like to continue on with presentations on Varnashrama. And this is going to be more of the same. But particularly I like to concentrate on one quality of a human being, and that's satisfaction. If you remember, we went through a presentation which Narada Muni gives in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. And of the topic of Varnashram, Srimad Bhagavatam has seven full chapters. Two of those are spoken by Krishna in the 11th canto, and the other five is by Narada in the 7th canto, which is a lot, because out of 180 chapters, then you have seven, which is running around, you know, 4% or something like that. So the 4% of the Bhagavatam is about Varnashrama. And Narada Muni introduces the topic by first talking about what the qualification is for one to accept and then actually be a practitioner. This is a characteristic quality or a characteristic feature of Shastra, is that whatever topic it teaches, it always establishes and stresses what the qualification of that topic is, which is nothing really new. The qualification for university is that you've gone to high school. The qualification for high school is that you've gone to elementary school. You just can't jump from nursery to a PhD course. You have to be systematically taught and elevated. And interestingly, of course, Varnashrama is for more or less all human beings. It's the qualification, or it's that by which one becomes qualified to become interested in spiritual life. It is not the qualification for bhakti, for devotional service. Now, this is a question. What's the one-word qualification for devotional service? Gentlemen, ladies? Huh? No. Huh? Just one word. No, you guys are Gyanis. No. Okay, I thought you had a training course here in the qualification for bhakti is faith. Ado Shraddha, you've heard that word before, right? So it begins with faith. That's the only qualification for bhakti, is faith. And faith you acquire by
association.
Sadhu Sangha, by associating with Vaishnavas. Now generally, people will not come into the association of Vaishnavas unless there's a social structure that facilitates it, although it may happen. And therefore, the systematic elevation of people so that conditioned souls, so that they can actually develop faith in Shastra, the association of devotees, in Krishna himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is that they should participate in the Varnashram system. And once one comes to devotional service, then the social framework and the lifestyle of how a devotee lives is described by the characteristics of the mode of goodness as practiced in a Brahminical culture, and it's described in Shastra under the category of karma, and karma in this case usually refers to Varnashrama. So there are 30 qualifications for or 30 characteristics that qualify one to take up Varnashram. 21 of those we named as being religious qualities, of which the satisfaction is one. And the other 9 are Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Archanam, Padasevanam, and so on. The other 9 limbs of devotional service. So you can say, well, why is it that someone's already got to chant Hare Krishna in order to chant Hare Krishna? And that's because people will do this necessarily without faith. They do it as a ritual, they do it because it's tradition, they do it because it's a family custom, and by doing that as a compulsory aspect, then in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, you find this phrase, bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya, is that bhakti begets bhakti. So sadhana bhakti gives prema bhakti. Similarly, even bhakti abhas, or the shadow of devotional service, results in real devotional service or pure devotional service. So anyabhilashita shunyam. And the qualification for pure devotional service is faith. Okay, don't forget, this is like, you know, really ABC stuff. Okay, so today I just wanted to concentrate on this one characteristic, satisfaction. And it's something that one could actually really talk about a lot because in one sense it's actually the root of many other good qualities that human beings and Vaishnavas are meant to have, and it's also the root of spiritual advancement, as we'll see from Krishna's own statements in the Bhagavad Gita. And I'm going to just introduce you, well, we're going to start with how karmis define. Oh, I need a microphone for giant. Just give it to Dayal, and then Dayal, you can do the English for me. And this is the definition. Go ahead.
Fulfillment of one's wishes, expectations or needs, or the pleasure derived from these.
Okay, maybe you can make it just a little louder so you can hear. So he says, fulfillment of one's wishes, expectations, or need, and the pleasure derived from these. So this is a typically mundane description of satisfaction because it's based on selfishness. It's based on the fact that I have desires, I have expectations, I have material needs that I'm trying to fulfill. And why? Because I'm going to get satisfaction, happiness from those things. And the result of that happiness and the fulfillment of these things is that, oh, now I'm satisfied. But of course we know that satisfaction never really comes. Or if it comes, it comes for a brief period of time, and then people again lose satisfaction. So it's not real satisfaction as a spiritual or a religious ingredient, which is integral for someone to be a good person. Because a good person has knowledge, a good person thinks about what he does. And as we'll see, this type of definition for satisfaction makes us actually lose our balance, our equilibrium, and pursue so many unnecessarily things in this world. But I'd like to start with another definition now, and this is the definition of the Bhagavatam. And I'm just going to stand a little in your way here. Unfortunately, I don't know this verse off by heart. Could have pushed this a little further back. Can you do that? And is it still in focus? Oh, that's better. Let's okay. Okay. Let's read together, since we haven't read a verse this morning. Sada santushta manasa.
Sada santushta manasa.
Sarva shiva maya disha.
Sarva shiva maya disha.
Sharkara kantaka dibyo.
Sharkara kantaka dibyo.
Yatopana pada shivam.
Yatopana pada shivam.
Translation.
For a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, there is no danger, even when he walks on pebbles and thorns. For him, everything is auspicious. Similarly, for one who is always self-satisfied, there is no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere.
This is a really beautiful verse, beautiful shloka. It's something you could add to your list of memorizing verses. I found it to be very, very instructive and very, very clear. It has very clear imagery that if you've got good shoes, and all of you are going to go outside with shoes and you walk along the path here at the manor, and there's so many pebbles over there, and I don't think there's so many thorns here, but if you walked around elsewhere, there would be. And it doesn't matter, because wherever you go, your shoes are protecting you. So Narada, this is Narada speaking, he's giving the same example that if you learn this art of being satisfied and being self-satisfied, if you learn the art of being satisfied, and it's actually a sadhana, it's something that one has to cultivate, then whatever you're walking along the path of devotional service, walking along the path back to Krishna, and it's not necessarily a thornless path. There are a lot of pebbles, there's a lot of stones, there's a lot of thorns on the way. But still, if, as you remember, this expectation from the previous definition, you don't have these high expectations, you don't have many desires that you're looking to get fulfilled and enjoy material happiness, then actually you'll be protected along the way. So it's a important, then it says you feel happiness. If you won't feel distress, you'll be self-satisfied, there's no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere. So it's a nice, really nice imagery. And I just want to go back to what I said a moment ago about how this quality is not something that, oops, I just acquire it and it's there. Like most things, whether they're real transcendental qualities or when we talked about faith. Okay, you have faith, but faith is a word. But there are different degrees of faith. And there are faith which is very very pliable and very fresh is the faith of a neophyte, and there can be different types of faith there. Faith that's really rooted in knowledge, in scriptural knowledge, becomes deeper faith. It's the faith of an intermediate devotee. And faith that's actually comes as a consequence of realization. In other words, seeing Krishna. That then becomes the deepest type of faith, which is the faith of a Uttama Adhikari, of a self-realized Vaishnava. And even amongst those, it's not that there's three types of faith, there's many levels of development of faith itself. So similarly, when we talk about, and you have to cultivate it, you have to cultivate faith. As we said earlier, it's by association of Vaishnavas, by hearing, by chanting. The process itself develops and nurtures that faith. Similarly, satisfaction, we have this phrase, learn to be satisfied with what you have. How do you go about learning it? So it's also something that we practice. We practice satisfaction, and practice satisfaction to get to this stage where it doesn't matter what situations, confrontation we come face to face with, or on the other side, what temptations come before us, we're satisfied. And I'm just going to here list satisfied with six different types of things. And there are more, at least in terms of my meditation, there are more things that one can be satisfied with. But here are six that are important and integral, especially when we're talking about the Varnashram institution. And one is that we're satisfied with being spirit, soul, and not this body. I mean, if we were satisfied with being spirit souls, we wouldn't be here in the material world. We have a sense of dissatisfaction, and we wanted to expand our enjoyment. So Krishna bahimukya hona bhogya vanchakare. So therefore, we turn towards the material body. Ooh, maybe we're going to get more, and maybe we're going to be happier, and maybe we can be like Krishna if we have this facility that places us in the illusion that we're going to be independent enjoyers. So it's something to meditate about. It's quite an interesting thing, being satisfied with being spirit, soul, and what comes along with that. Because being satisfied with spirit, soul also means you have to be satisfied with being a what? A servant. Are we satisfied with being a servant? Now, that's a real problem for us. You know, we're brainwashed to be a master. We are competing with Krishna. We're all Krishna's competitors, which is very, very humorous thing. It's like, you know, ants trying to compete with a cheetah. And what is the cheetah thinking about all these little ants scurrying along and thinking that they're competitors? They're never going to be able to keep up. And satisfied that the goal of life is self-realization and not sense gratification. I cited earlier, we have this verse, Anyabhilashita Shunyam, that a definition of pure devotional service. Well, why does Rupa Goswami start off Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu with the definition of pure devotional service? Because there's impure devotional service also. Impure devotional service means that some devotees have not only their goal of pleasing Krishna, but they also have a goal for different types of sense enjoyment. They have other plans for going perhaps to the heavenly planets. When Srila Prabhupada first wrote, when he wrote the letter to Jananda Prabhu's disappearance, or at Jananda Prabhu's disappearance, then he said, well, if you still have some material desire, then you'll go to the heavenly planets, and then having fulfilled those desires, then from there you'll go back home, back to Godhead. But then Srila Prabhupada, when later he heard about how actually Jananda left this world, then he said, no, then he went directly back to Godhead. So, but there is such a thing. There's such a thing as mixing devotional service with not only sense gratification, but also a desire for liberation. And that desire for liberation is much more subtle than the desire for sense gratification, and maybe more difficult to give up. In other words, that I want to be happy. That I want to be free from anxiety, I want to be free from the headaches of what it takes to manage a Krishna consciousness movement, what to speak of being part of a Krishna consciousness movement, the different conflicts that come up, that I just want a nice, peaceful life. Maybe I should just retire away to Vrindavan and chant Hare Krishna, because then I'll be liberated from all of these things. But jnana karma dhyanavrittam. But the definition says no. You have to be willing to accept all kinds of headaches and all kinds of difficulties in Krishna's service. What makes Krishna pleased? So if it makes Krishna pleased, that I have to actually, therefore, go through different inconveniences, then I'll accept that, as the last verse of Shukshashtakam says. So being satisfied with, yes, that we're exclusively, this is ekeha kuru nandana, we only have one direction, and that is self-realization. The next one is, and this is what Srimad Bhagavatam concentrates on, it's what we're going to concentrate on also, being satisfied with what we need. And, you know, there's these two things. Satisfied with what you need, and to try to fulfill all the things that you want. And we're living in a world that's trying to convince everyone that no matter how much they get, it's never enough. More and more and more. This is what advertisement is all about, advertising is all about. It's about making people greedy. In other words, that the world is not enough. No matter how much you get, you always need more. So, do we live by what we actually need? We don't. We as devotees don't live by what we need. Just like yesterday, we had lunch, and one devotee said, well, if there was more curd in the sabji, then I'd be eating more. But do we need to eat curd every single day? And is it actually feasible? So if you ask the Goshala, is it possible to feed everyone curd every day? They'll say, no, it's impossible. Not unless we have a herd of 5,000 cows or something like that. And is it even actually healthy? Is it even something that's within, Krishna can do it in the spiritual world, but is it something that we should be doing every day? Living by what we really need. And of course, if we're on the topic of eating, we probably don't need to eat as much as we eat. We could probably do with a lot less. But fortunately, because we're honoring prasadam, therefore, even when you overeat, you become purified. Doesn't mean you don't get sensually agitated. It doesn't mean that you don't necessarily get sick, but you certainly get purified despite all of those other handicaps. So, living by our needs, for instance, at the present time, with, you know, a good part of the world, the large proportion of the world, not having what they need to live, and another portion of the world having more than they can ever even use or engage. And some people on this planet, you know, on the top 5% of the people on this planet have 60% of the planet's resources. So they can't neither spend their money, they can't, there's not enough things for them to, they don't have enough time, they don't have enough energy to actually engage all of the resources that they have at their command for sense gratification. So it's just like a surplus. It's something like the Roman orgies, you know, when they would just eat, and then they would make themselves vomit again, and then they would eat again, and because they just didn't know what to do with themselves. So this planet, we are already, if you balance out humanity between the 7 billion of us, we're already consuming 50% more than the resources that this planet has. Now that's very, very impractical, because it means that we're running out really quickly. So even if we were to maintain a certain type of balance, it would mean, and you know, you could pose the question here, is everyone here willing to scale back 50% of what they're doing now, whether it be in terms of food, in terms of clothing, in terms of money that we spend and other things? Are we willing to cut back our lifestyle by 50% In other words, go back down, or are we still going up? This sort of myth of sustainable development. There's no such thing as sustainable development. And this is the distinction between Varnashram and Krishna consciousness and material life. Material life is all about sustainable material development. And for us, Krishna consciousness and Varnashram is all about sustainable spiritual development. So the type of society that we're proposing is spiritual development, and as far as material things, just keep them to a basic need, because what we need is very favorable for spiritual life. And when we live by wants, then we're cultivating qualities that are destructive towards our own spiritual development. Kama, Krodha, Tatha, Lobha. Krishna says these are the three gates that lead to hell. So we spend a lot of time and energy talking about Kama because it is so all-consuming. And Krodha is certainly a problem, anger. But this Lobha or greed, and this is greed, taking more than what we need. And that's the quality of a Brahmin, is that he's very, very careful to actually just, what is it that I really need? And then stick to that. So that's another type of satisfaction. Being satisfied with your karma, and these two things are connected, because by my karma, I may have X resources at my command without excessive effort, but my neighbor, with maybe no effort, he has 1,000x. And so we're living in a world where we're trying to convince everyone that everyone should be able to live at the same lifestyle. I mean, that's an impossibility, just as we mentioned earlier, in terms of the resources that our planet holds. But it's also an impossibility, and much more of an impossibility, from the karmic point of view. Everyone doesn't have a karma. But we ask the question, well, isn't it true that if you really struggle hard, and if you fight for it, and sometimes you may steal for it, then you can get more than what your quota is, than what Ishopanishad says? Well, yes, you can get more now, but later on you're going to get less. So you can't get more. And this is also described in the Bhagavatam. Narada Muni also, Prahlad Maharaj describes that. Everyone's karma describes how much pleasure you're going to get and how much suffering you're going to get, and you're not going to avoid it. You can try to, just like a thief, you may think, why should I get a job? Why should I work? I'll just steal. Okay, you steal now and you have a certain lifestyle, but after that you're going to be spending 20 years in jail, and then you're going to have much, much less, and you're going to have lost the most valuable thing, which is that you'll have lost your freedom. So being satisfied with what our karma is, and it's quite important for devotees to know what their quota is. So Prabhupada uses this word quota, isha vashamidam cha sarvam. What's our quota? And you find out pretty easily if your lifestyle is based on 16 rounds, four regulative principles. Well, four regulative principles don't take time, but 16 rounds do. A morning program that you have so much time for yourself, so much time for your family. And then how much time do you have left? Well, say you have 8 hours a day. Okay, well, how much income do I generate by that 8 hours a day? And that's it. I'm not working more than that. My priority is spiritual development, not economic development. And by that, it may mean that I live like Sudama Vipra. Because Sudama Vipra didn't go out of his way to try to increase his position. He just accepted, this is my karma. So being satisfied with one's karma. And then his classmate, Krishna, was the king of Dwarka. But still, he just couldn't bring himself to ask Krishna or go beyond what was actually his allotted karma. It wasn't in him. And when it's not in you, that's called being a Brahmin. It's not in you, to go beyond that which will sacrifice your spiritual advancement just so that I can get a little more. And now this is something that devotees really struggle with. So I'm talking about devotees who necessarily not living in the temple, but devotees who have to work, who've got to travel 2-3 hours a day just to get to work in London. How do you balance this thing? And it's a constant dynamic that gets brought up. How do you balance the work that you have to do as well as your spiritual life? I have enough time. Because Krishna consciousness isn't about believing in Krishna. It's not just about getting through your 16 rounds. It's about going very deeply into spiritual life. It's actually a full-time job. Unfortunately, not only is Krishna consciousness a full-time job, but living in the world that we're living in today is also a full-time job. Because we're living in a cold climate, so you got to have double glazing, you got to have a big house, you got to have heating, you have to pay for all of these things, and we're also in a very complex economic and social environment. So all of these things really demand a lot of time. What's the priority? So if the priority is how we're that I've got to have that bigger house, I've got to have that car, and that's where it starts, then the time is going to get lost off spiritual life. But if the priority is spiritual life, then alright, if I end up, there's a lot of people biking into the city, if I end up driving a bike, and if I only, you know, have a semi-detached, then that's fine. And I'll accept that. I'm satisfied with that. Why? Because my real priority is spiritual life.